This is Zone 1 Radio.
Zone 1 Radio.
I'm Zef, Zone 1 Radio's illegitimate expatriate son, and this is the email from America. Now, long-time listeners will know that I normally start the show with some throwaway line, some bad joke, some insult, perhaps, of a celebrity or the president. Are they not one and the same right now? But not on this show. Instead, to honor someone who just passed away, I want to give a doff of the cap to teen idol David Cassidy. Yes, if you're of my generation, that name really does mean something to you. But if you're not of my generation, then just a quick tip of the head to teen heartthrobs everywhere. You know who you are, and you know if you have one. Talking of heartthrobs, let's get started with Jared Leto's band, 30 Seconds to Mars.
Once there were people here called Indians.
Native Americans, whatever. And then a boat came called the Mayflower, landed on a big rock and carrying people just like me. And the first year on their own was hard.
It was really, really hard. Let me start again.
This was long ago, before we stole most of their land, killed most of them, and moved the rest to reservations, before they lost their language and their customs. Okay, forget what I just said. Once there was this one day where everybody seemed to know they needed each other.
他是说这个印第安人啊，这些土著人经过一些困难以后，他们知道他们要互相帮助。
This one day when they knew for certain that they couldn't do it alone.
Ah, welcome to the show. You just heard Katie Holmes, a pre-Tom Cruise Katie Holmes, really struggling to explain Thanksgiving in the underrated, underseen indie comedy Pieces of April. Now, if you had trouble reaching anyone in America the third week of November, if your calls were not returned, if you were overcharged for your Uber when you landed at LAX, if it seemed a little odd that the president was taunting turkeys and not anyone else, well, it's because it was Thanksgiving, the North American holiday. Eating turkey, watching football, going shopping, spending time with family, in most cases fighting traffic, the airports, the train station, to go, in most cases, no small distance.
Del.
Oh.
Why did you kiss my ear?
Why are you holding my hand?
Where's your other hand?
Between two pillows.
Those aren't pillows.
Ah, those aren't pillows. That was Steve Martin and John Candy as two strangers thrown together trying to get home for Thanksgiving in John Hughes' Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Now, is Thanksgiving, though, is it really just an orgy of travel or eating pie, passing out on your recliner, or emerging to fight with strangers over parking spots at the shopping mall? Let's find out what it's supposed to be all about with our Talking American this week. Patrick, who is a U.S. history and social studies teacher, he's going to give us a little background, a little context on the great American tradition that is Thanksgiving.
So, traditionally, the first Thanksgiving was attributed to the Pilgrims in Plymouth in 1621, which is in Massachusetts. So they came over on the Mayflower in 1620. They had a rough winter and spring, and then an Indian named Squanto, who had been kidnapped by an English sea captain, enslaved and brought to England. He made his way back, and he was of the Pawtuxent tribe, and he taught the Pilgrims, as they called themselves, how to plant corn, how to fish locally, avoid plants that were poisonous. And so they did the first Thanksgiving in the fall of 1621 as a Thanksgiving for the bountiful fall harvest, essentially. So that is where a lot of the legendary tradition comes from. We know that in Jamestown and Virginia in the 1610, probably, they had a Thanksgiving as well. And we also know that, like, the Spanish had a Thanksgiving in Florida. If you look back at ancient Roman history, ancient Greek history, they also did a fall harvest sort of Thanksgiving celebration after the harvest to get ready for winter, praising the gods for giving them the food. And then a lot of Native American tribes also did their own fall harvest kind of Thanksgiving celebration. But the traditional one that Americans like to point to is the 1621 Plymouth in Massachusetts now. And so there's a lot of, you know, controversy and legend that surrounds it. So we think it was in September, October, or November of 1621. And it was a three-day harvest festival. And the local Wampanoag Indians brought deer. They brought five deer to the celebration. So we think they had deer meat, corn, and probably some birds and fish from the local Massachusetts area. So sometimes in Massachusetts, they would celebrate that, not always on a yearly basis, but as a colony. And then as the Revolutionary War approached, the Continental Congress in 1777, it was written by Sam Adams, actually, and they decreed that there should be a day of Thanksgiving in December. And it was fasting, and it wasn't really a feast, but it was actually kind of saying we should support our Continental Army soldiers in the field and kind of give up something for Thanksgiving. So oftentimes in the colonial era, it wasn't a holiday surrounded with food, but actually kind of giving up something, kind of like what they would have called disinterested virtue in the American Revolution. That's what their name for it was. And so it was sort of giving up something instead of eating a lot. So that's during the Revolutionary War, kind of like remembrance and give thanks. And also they had this big thing in the American Revolution, like God's on our side. So this is providence that, you know, God wills the American Revolution to be successful. So they thought. And so they wanted to make sure, you know, God was in good favor with them. So then we go to the early Republic, and President George Washington, he decrees in 1789, which is the first year that he's president under the Constitution, that there should be a day of Thanksgiving in October, and he declares it a national day. And there used to be more of a religious significance with Thanksgiving. Nowadays, people do go to church, but back then, it had, I think, a little bit more of a religious component to it in the late 18th century. So then, throughout the early 19th century, some presidents also declared days of Thanksgiving, but other times states would do it. So the state of New York had their own Thanksgiving day that they did. And it was mostly a New England, so the northeastern United States, and mid-Atlantic celebration. So New York would fall into that category. It wasn't really celebrated in the South all that much. President Abraham Lincoln in 1863, during the American Civil War, he declares a day of Thanksgiving as well. And so I'm going to quote him. He says, "To ask God to, quote, commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable strife, and to heal the wounds of the nation." So he declared the final Thursday in November, a day of Thanksgiving. And so in the middle of the Civil War, where there were, you know, 625,000 people killed, it was a tumultuous time. And so he's really big on healing the wounds and, you know, making sure the Union can be whole again. And so that was a important proclamation in 1863. Afterwards, Thanksgiving is still celebrated. oftentimes in November, and then in the 1940s, President Franklin Roosevelt, he makes it official that it's the fourth Thursday of November. And he had actually wanted to move it up an extra week to have more Christmas shopping to get in, to make the American economy a little better during the war, but people were uncomfortable with that, so the Congress said the fourth Thursday of November is what it will be. In terms of traditions, some Americans today do canned food drives, or they work at homeless shelters or soup kitchens, and a lot of people do, especially those who are more affluent and better off, they will do a day of service on Thanksgiving, so that's a little bit reminiscent of maybe the Revolutionary War era people, and it's oftentimes you'll see a president will go to a war zone and serve food to the troops, or he'll go to a local charity and serve food to the needy with his family. So that's kind of a common thing, and I know of many people who do that. Canned goods and charities are a big deal on Thanksgiving, whereas most of the American public, about 75%, get the day off completely, including federal employees. So turkey is the traditional food of the American Thanksgiving dinner. It's usually roasted and then stuffed with breadcrumbs, but as all American foods, they deep fry it as well and make it extra unhealthy. So that's kind of a popular thing, especially in the South, but lately people have bought deep fryers and they'll deep fry their turkey today. It's such a popular thing that some people don't even call it Thanksgiving Day, they call it Turkey Day, just to associate it with the food. So according to a turkey kind of lobbyist, what would you call it, a turkey lobbyist group, they estimate that there's about $1 billion a year on Thanksgiving spent on the meal, and 45 million turkeys are consumed, and about 85% of Americans eat turkey on Thanksgiving Day. So it's a boom for the turkey industry. Starting in 1924, Macy's had the first Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City, and that's become an annual tradition. And then the other big part of Thanksgiving, kind of from a cultural perspective, is football, American football. So on the gridiron, you've got the Detroit Lions, who host a home game. They've hosted every year from 1934 to 1938, and then from 1945 to the present. And the Dallas Cowboys have hosted every year from 1966 to the present. Also during the day and on the evening are college football games. And then high school football also has rivalry games on that day. Sometimes it's called the Turkey Bowl. Other times, where I'm from in Missouri, they play the state championships on Thanksgiving. And there's a local team, Kirkwood, plays Webster Groves every year on Thanksgiving Day. It's a really important travel weekend for the airline industry, railroads and cars. So it's about a 4 or 5 day break from school, and most people have Thanksgiving Day off, and many have the Friday off. So for some, it's a 4 day or 5 day weekend. It's in some ways busier than Christmas travel because it's in a shorter amount of time people will travel. So from Wednesday to Sunday, it's really busy. And as I said before, about 3/4 of the American public is off of work. It's a big travel season. The airports are busy. There's a lot of traffic on the road. Wednesday night before Thanksgiving is one of the busiest nights in American bars. And it's a big night for college students when they come home to meet up with their friends from their hometown. And oftentimes it's known as Blackout Wednesday, as a kind of play on the shopping day, which is on Friday, and it's typically called Black Friday. So ever since 1952, that's kind of been the unofficial beginning of the Christmas holiday shopping season. In the past, 10 years or so, it's been over $50 billion spent over the course of 4 days during the Black Friday weekend sales. Some stores open on Friday morning at 4, 5, or 6 a.m. To accommodate the shoppers who want the deals. Other stores are open on Thanksgiving night for the people who just can't not shop. And then there's online shopping as well. Some people will start their holiday shopping online, during the week before Thanksgiving, and then afterwards, sometimes there's sales on Cyber Monday, as it's known. In terms of controversies, there is some, and I think it's similar to Columbus Day in how do Americans celebrate it, and what role do Native Americans play in this holiday, because Native Americans were celebrating these harvest days before the pilgrims from Plymouth, England ever showed up in Massachusetts. So I think there's been, some who see the holiday as an excuse to overeat and get drunk and maybe not realize the the white European American versus Native American interactions that have happened over the course of 400 years or so. But yeah, it's a paid holiday for the U.S. government, and the Federal Reserve is closed, banks are closed, and the New York Stock Exchange is closed. So if those things are closed, you know Americans think it's important.
As you heard Patrick explain earlier, if you go up to the average American and ask them about Thanksgiving, the first thing that will come out of their mouth will be food, as opposed to going into their mouth. Anyway, shopping, football, family, yep, it's all good. But at the end of the day, here in the biggest of consumer societies, it does come down to the consumption. So let's take a tour of the kitchen in Anytown, USA on Thanksgiving Thursday.
Okay. So are you going to carve the turkey?
Yes, but what we need is the platter for the turkey.
It's on the porch.
Mom, yeah. Go get the platter for the turkey.
All right, so okay. Here in Anytown, USA, I want you to explain to me, what are we eating for a traditional American Thanksgiving
dinner? A traditional American Thanksgiving. We have stuffing. That's the most important part.
Oh, with gravy, too.
With gravy. With the gravy. We have green beans and carrots, and in my family, a tradition are crescent dinner rolls.
Okay, so you're
giving us a those are in the oven now.
All right, so you're giving us a once-over of the whole menu. I do have some questions.
Yes.
Now, your turkey looks like it's here under a fleece jacket. Can you explain this to me?
Because my mother said it had to stay warm, and we originally put a towel on it.
It's not like he's going out, though, is he?
He's not going anywhere.
Okay.
Thank goodness. But we put a towel. She said 100% cotton is no good for that. So there is now a University of Connecticut fleece on it.
Okay, but why does this make the turkey warm?
It's keeping it warm.
So three layers. Okay.
Three layers. It needs three layers.
All right, okay. So now let's move over towards your stuffing. Now, what's in your stuffing?
Okay, so the stuffing really is just basically bread.
Just
it's bread, and sometimes people put apples, and this has sage in it.
Do you know what's the difference between dressing and stuffing?
It's the same thing.
Okay, just a
different
name.
It's the same thing. People call it different things.
All right, so walk me through some traditional American side dishes.
Okay, so we're
going to
have green beans.
Okay.
And carrots. And mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes being the key, with lots of gravy.
Now, obviously, back in the United Kingdom, roast potatoes are what we have at Christmas, which
right.
is our big winter banquet.
But we take them and wreck them and mash them.
Okay. Now, is there anything in these mashed potatoes?
Butter.
Just butter.
Butter and a little cream.
Okay.
But that's really it. We don't have the nice potatoes like you have. We have to ruin them.
Okay.
Like, mash them.
Now, do we have any sweet potatoes?
No, for some, we don't have sweet potatoes today.
Oh, why not? Why
because
not?
My family doesn't have those. Also called
why does
yams.
Your, now, stop for a minute here. Why doesn't your family eat sweet potatoes or yams?
Because no one ever had them.
It's a very American thing.
I know.
Well, they're potatoes
I think
of
it's
color.
A more, no, I think it's a more southern thing.
Okay.
And we were up in New England, and they didn't make those.
Now, what other things that you're aware of are unique to a New England Thanksgiving?
Apple. Oh, definitely the pies.
Okay.
So apple pie, pumpkin pie.
Do we have those pies on the menu for
yes,
this evening?
Yes, those will be appearing later.
Okay.
They're
now,
on the porch, Chelsea.
They're on the porch, chilling.
Oh, so they're not. Do they have a jacket on like you said?
They might. They don't have a Yukon jacket.
All right, so
we have to get them one.
So now your mother here, she's technically
okay.
undressing the turkey.
The Yukon jacket is off the turkey.
Okay.
So now we are going to take it and transfer to a platter, and John is going to carve it, and this will be a stressful moment.
How have you
this
cooked,
is stressful now.
How have you cooked your
you
turkey?
You just roast it.
Just roast it. You, done,
you just
you
roast
anything,
it.
You
no, it's got some herbs on it, but this is the part to watch. Could be very stressful.
Well, remember, this
moment.
Is radio, so, you know, watch
it. I know, we can't see it.
If he does any tricks.
It's too bad. All right, so John here, the dogs have now come.
Okay.
Because
well,
they're super excited.
Hopefully
they'll
be,
smell
they'll be
it.
At a different time. Now, let me ask you a question about the Thanksgivings of your youth. How have any of the traditions changed over time?
No! That's the most amazing thing, is you replicate the Thanksgivings of your youth.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. I was looking online, and I was reading somewhere that we've covered sweet potatoes and all that type of thing. But I hear across the South, they have macaroni and cheese. Is there anything that you ate at Thanksgiving that that one wouldn't think of as Thanksgiving
yes.
soup.
Yes. So in John's family, and they're from Maine, they would have made a Jell-O salad.
Now, what's in a Jell-O salad? It sounds
anything
nasty to
that was in the fridge. So marshmallows and fruit, and I've eliminated that from today's meal.
And it was made with, like, jelly, as we say back in England.
Jelly.
So was it a sweet?
It could have been dessert, or? Right, John? No, it would have been right there.
Fluorescent.
Okay.
It was fluorescent and would have been right there.
And that's and a special, that sounds like that's a special event meal, the jelly
could be
with the
amazing,
leftovers.
Amazing, right, John?
It was my grandmother, God rest her soul. That's, but if you want to bark at her for a little while, that's fine.
She was interned in Jell-O. So what else from back in the day do you remember?
Okay, so the best thing is the stuffing.
Okay.
Now, we cook the stuffing today out of the turkey,
okay.
but you used to cook it in the turkey, which is now not considered a super healthy thing
well, no,
to
look,
do.
Well, no, I think those salmonella deaths sort of put the blocks to that
could
way of cooking.
That.
Yeah.
But you used to, like, reach into the oven and eat some of the stuffing right out of the turkey.
What's in your stuffing?
The bread,
and I'm not going to repeat
sage.
That because that sounds vaguely, just vaguely risque. What's in it?
Basically bread. This one has bread, a little bit of apple, and sage.
Okay. And that's an old-fashioned traditional
yeah,
recipe,
that's
right?
That's an old-fashioned recipe.
What else in time?
From the Pilgrims.
Well, again, we're not being risque. So, over time, what other things have shown up in stuffing here in America? Because that sounds very much like a British
stuffing.
No,
you know what?
And
but I think oysters. That people have added oysters, more fruits, more nuts. Some people do a cornbread stuffing, but that's down in the South.
Okay, down in the South.
Yeah, cornbread stuffing.
Is there any tradition other than the Jell-O surprise thing that you talked about? Is there any other traditional food that's sort of gone by the wayside that you're either glad that's gone or that you miss?
The Jell-O salad.
Oh. Oh, we've got cranberry sauce too.
And
just like in England.
The cranberry sauce, because that is... It is believed, although now people aren't clear on that, that the Pilgrims landed on Cape Cod at Plymouth Rock, and that's where all the cranberries live.
You know, earlier on the show, we did hear from a historian who told us about the Pilgrims.
Yes.
Let me ask you, though, and this is the big question for any household. Are we doing canned cranberry sauce, or are we doing, oh, that's like a proper...
That's like a proper thing. You see it? It's well, you can't because it's radio, but there are berries in there.
Okay.
So it's not out of the can when you have the ridges in it.
Well,
that's been made a long time ago.
Okay, because you know those ridges add flavor. That's what I've
and
always been told.
They're an awful lot like what, John? Jell-O salad.
Yeah, it is Jell-O salad, but we've moved on, apparently.
All right, and so we also have gravy, obviously, for this.
You need a lot of gravy, because here's what the gravy is key for. We had the gravy boat. The gravy is key, because the
I didn't want to interrupt you there.
I know,
there was a buzzer going off. Shouldn't you
That's
get that?
That's the crescent in a row.
Okay.
But the key with Thanksgiving is it's tricky. Look how beautiful those look.
Oh, they do look great. Yeah, and
those
the
look
smell
beautiful?
Is wonderful.
Yeah, Pillsbury.
Yeah. yeah.
Is the key, the trick with Thanksgiving is getting everything out at the same time.
Okay.
So when the gravy is hot, you can essentially heat everything up with the gravy.
Okay. What's your favorite part of the Thanksgiving meal?
Stuffing.
Okay.
The stuffing. Yeah.
All right, so we'll eat all of this, and then we'll have our desserts later.
We're going to have our desserts. Let's revisit this at dessert.
Sure.
When we look at the pecan pie, the pumpkin pie, and the apple pie.
Pecan, you said?
Pecan.
Pecan, okay.
She's from New England.
She's from New England. All right, so it's an American dessert. We have
it's
all kinds
American
of
dessert.
We have all kinds
all
of pies here on the table.
All made by my mother. We have the very traditional apple.
And that. And can I say something? This is a very... This is a traditional apple in that it's got a lid. Most American pies don't have a lid, but this is a full pastry lid.
It's got a high lid. It's got a high lid, and she has a little cutout with a little turkey.
Oh, just like my grandma made. Now, what else do we have here?
The pecan.
Okay, or pecan. Six different kinds of apples. Okay.
With the pecan.
And I thought it was just two, red and green.
I know. And then the super traditional pumpkin pie.
All right, so what's in it?
Which is here?
A pecan pie is obviously the nuts, but what else is in that
pie? It's sugar syrup.
Sugar syrup.
That's what holds it all together.
Okay. And then obviously a full pastry base, no
and
lid.
And a full pastry, and that's no lid.
And
the
then
pumpkin
pie
no lid. It's just a pumpkin pie.
But when they say pumpkin,
with the nutmeg.
Okay.
And add it, and that's all it is.
So the pumpkin is sort of mushed?
Yes. Yeah, for lack of a better word, all mushed together, and then baked, and it's beautiful.
So technical question, this is not like a cheesecake. This is baked in the oven.
No, it's baked frozen. In the oven. Okay. It's totally baked in the oven. So we have two choices for the topping.
Okay.
Some people like whipped. This is fresh whipped. And some people go with the vanilla ice cream. Traditionally, the vanilla ice cream is for the apple pie.
Custard, a thing only available in England, not an American thing.
No, no
just
custard.
Fresh cream and ice cream.
Yeah, no custard.
Are you allowed to take both?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I am, and I'm back again. So, I was up in Boston last week. That's Boston, Massachusetts. Somewhat apt, considering that this is our Explaining Thanksgiving show. Boston, no longer the home of casual racism and IRA sympathizers. Good grief, that's exactly the sort of dumb thing that Englishmen abroad might say. Oh, we're so much more progressive now. Boston is actually the home of Marky Mark and Ben Affleck. Actually, not Ben Affleck. He was born in California. I didn't know that. I found that out on Wikipedia. He just likes to make out that he's from Boston. Actually made a fool of myself chatting with locals about Ben Affleck. They would just stare at me blankly in the way that you do stare at dumb Englishmen abroad saying stupid things. Anyway, Boston, it's a great city. I know it's a facile way of putting it, but it is a really beautiful town, a mix of new and old, wide tree-lined avenues, some really great architecture. I was up there for, amongst other reasons, a college football game between the hometown Boston College Eagles and the University of Connecticut. UConn, as they're called, about 100 miles and one state away. Now, I've been to plenty of American football games in my time here, professional and college. I do enjoy watching college games more. There's the pageantry of the marching bands, the passion of the students and the fans. I somehow think it's just a more immersive experience than watching the pros. Now, this particular contest was an event game, not because of the two teams. BC are not really one of the sport's blue bloods, and Connecticut, well, simply put, they're just bad. And this is not to be harsh, but the game itself, well, it was, I don't know, the equivalent of Bristol Rovers and Swindon Town meeting, a matchup of the most provincial, limited local interest. But what elevated this game was the fact that it was being played at a certain venue, the historic Fenway Park, home of the Boston Red Sox. Now, I need to preface my opinions here. I'm not some trained spotter. Well, mostly not. Not one of those guys whose goal in life is to watch lower-level cricket played only in counties that have cathedral cities of under 17,000 people with the last three syllables of expert in their name. No, I'm not on a life tour of non-league football grounds of the Southeast Counties League. Yes, Farnborough North End. I'm looking at you. But I am one of those men of indeterminate middle age who does check off a discreet mental list when I see a building or an event that has some significance in the most trivial of ways. Just repeat that sentence of absurdity back to yourself for the ultimately flawed denial of train spotability. Yeah, I'll admit it. I'm a bit of an anorak. I do keep track of trivial stuff that I've seen. Hey, J.K. Rowling's house. Oh gosh, over there. The park where Abraham Lincoln read. Ooh, look at that. That's the hotel where they filmed Donald Trump doing... Yeah, let's leave it at that. Fenway Park is one of the most iconic baseball stadiums in all of America. It's old, a little rickety in spots. It's a throwback to pre-Depression times, to men wearing flat caps, bags of peanuts costing a penny, and families sitting around radios the size of bathtubs. Smack in the middle of downtown Boston, it's brick and iron, and the tightest of wooden seats, an incongruent time machine surrounded by glass office buildings and neon-lit restaurants and superstores. It is, design-wise, light years away from the modern stadia that scatter the globe, those club-level executive box mall concourse microwave ovens that are the new Wembley or the Emirates Stadium. It's got two tiers. Large or tall, one-foot square posts keep the top above the bottom, and the odds are overwhelming that your seat will have an obstructed view for at least one or two big moments in the game. Underneath the stands, there's no food hall. Instead, a hallway that's naked brick, more tight and winding, a labyrinth to navigate getting from street to your seat. The bathrooms, well, they have been upgraded, as inevitably have the prices of your beer and hot dogs. The trend in modern architecture, all of it, not just sports arenas, is for the new to echo the past, a nostalgia-infused cheap trick to fool your sense of place somewhat. So going to Fenway Park is a welcome exception. It is the real thing. It's not some modern pastiche, some homage looking to comfort you that its very existence isn't an intrusion on the past that it has replaced. Fenway Park was built for baseball, so without getting too deep in it, playing a football game there is a little incongruent. The fields are different shapes, so not all the seats can be used. And while the stadium's outfield wall, the famous green monster, makes sense for baseball, when the field is angled for American football, well, the green monster takes up the whole sideline, causing a slightly off-balanced atmosphere. It's a bit like closing off half of centre court at Wimbledon. But when they have these events, well, it's not about the game, it's about the experience. It's a bit like eating fast food off expensive china. The attraction wasn't watching two teams that between them had lost more than half the games they played. No, it was watching them fumble and tumble around in one of the greatest sporting arenas in all of America. It's an excuse to get hot and bothered about what would normally be a lukewarm Saturday night out. This is to do so, well, feels a little bit of a con. A piece of cheap hyperbole. The venue itself is more important than the event. Or maybe it's just an admittance that sport as spectator sport is losing its luster, overpriced and overexposed, leading to sleight of hand and back alley gimmicks to re-inject some excitement. What's next? Volleyball in the Sistine Chapel? Table tennis in Bruce Springsteen's backyard? I don't want to come across as some old reactionary, but going to Fenway Park was an experience worth having, if the train spotter in you needs to be sated. And yet to experience genuine echoes of the past, that's those flat cap wearing men clutching evening newspaper, 12-year-old boy selling Cracker Jack for a penny, well, maybe it's best just going to these places when they're completely empty. Placing the modern over the old? Well, it only intrudes on the past.
It's gotta be so fun for them. Like, my scholarship playing at Fenway, like, it's awesome.
That's your lot for this week. Did it feel to you that perhaps this Thanksgiving special was a load of home recordings cobbled together? But let me ask you something. Were you not entertained? Maybe I shouldn't ask that question. Although, to be fair, if you're actually still listening right now to answer that question, then you either were really entertained, or you just fell over and weren't able to turn your device off. Thank you to Patrick. He really is a US history and social sciences teacher. I've only lived in America, over 30 years, and I still learned stuff from him that I didn't know before. Also, thank you to Mary for letting me blunder around her kitchen and then eat her food. One of the voices in the background you might have heard was official lawyer of the pod, John. Mary is his wife. Hey, you do what you need to do when it's a holiday week. Also, thank you to whoever was sitting in front of me at Fenway Park. Probably heard him talking away about how great the Yukon band was. That was the Yukon band that you heard during the email there. If you ever get a chance to go to an American college football game, please go. The halftime show with the 100-piece college band out on the field playing their songs, kids twirling flags, the whole nine yards. It truly is spectacle in the best American fashion. Plenty of shows at Zone One Radio to catch up with. If you've missed them on the stream, Sheila Smith and all the gang right there. If you want to contact us at the station, you can find us on Facebook. If you want to contact me, you can find me at Twitter. You can abuse me and tell me how lazy my show was. I can be found at Zef Radio. I think that's it for this week. So, one song to go. It's the B-52s and Party Mix. Strangely apt, I think. In the words of the U.S. Navy's Top Gun Training Squadron, have a bandit day.
Zone1Radio.com.